Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Elliot Richards needs a life.
You're the man, Elliot.
It's all about first impression. Go over there, say hello.
But most of all, he wants Allison.
Hi.
Hi. Do I know you?
Oh, I sure hope so. We've only been working together for the last 4 years.
I don't think I've ever seen you before.
You know, I'm here with some friends, and I was wondering if maybe you wanted to...
Elliot has never had any of his dreams come true.
I would give anything to have that girl in my life.
Until now.
Hello. You're very glib. I bet you're a whiz with the ladies.
Well.
Let's go someplace quiet so we can talk.
Okay.
What if I told you that I have the power to give you anything and everything you've always dreamed of?
Who are you?
Promise not to tell anyone?
I'm the devil.
Yeah, right.
I am the devil. Satan, Lucifer, the Prince of Darkness. Well, Princess of Darkness, anyway.
Why don't we take a look at the contract?
I, the devil, with offices in Purgatory Hell in Los Angeles, will give you 7 wishes for 1 piddling little soul.
Is this real?
It could be. Sign it, Elliot.
Okay. I wish that I were married to Allison and that I were very, very rich and very powerful.
You got it.
Muy buenos días, señor. ¿Me apetece algo de comer?
Como dices, no hablo español.
Un momento. Realmente estoy hablando español.
Hola. Mucho gusto.
No, gracias. Soy alérgico a los crustáceos.
Elliot may have 7 wishes.
You turned me into a drug dealer.
You asked for rich and powerful.
But she's not going to give him...
Back so soon?
...a chance in hell.
Oh.
Bedazzled.
Nobody gets it totally right away. That's why you get 7 wishes. Besides, do I look like somebody who tried to trick you?
Indiana Jones, Avengers, Endgame, it follows. Joker, Wreck-It Ralph, Mamma Mia, here we go again. Titanic 2, Jack's back, 7 cents, Ghost Attack, Alien vs. Predator, except this on their friends. We'll keep watching the movies right up till our TVs break. So just crank up the volume till your speakers start to shake. You need a second take.
I'm telling you, the devil gypped me for a hamburger. And I'm Sebastian.
I'm gay. Well, thanks for dropping by. I'm Andy Schossler.
And welcome to our review of Bedazzled. My close second quote was, don't you think that secular humanism is yummy?
I had the cookies line. These look like the cookies my grandma used to make. And he tries one. But these are the cookies my grandma used to make. Yes, that's the power I have, Elliot.
Welcome to Bedazzled. So,
great film.
Lovely film. I saw this actually in cinemas growing up. So this is one of the ones, the few Brendan Fraser films I'd seen prior to this review. Mm. Yeah, it's a really fun film.
I love it. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
It's such a massive thing for Liz Hurley too.
Yes.
Especially after this film. Not so much after Austin Powers, but definitely after Bedazzled.
See, I knew her from Austin Powers primarily.
Yeah.
What did she ever do apart from these two films? Because I can't think, I mean, I'm sure she's done films. I just can't think of seeing her in any other movies.
She was a model. That's how she made her big fame. I think Austin Powers was the first big film she was in.
I'm just curious if I
missed... I was having this conversation with my wife and just, what exactly is Liz Hurley famous for? Is it modeling? Yeah.
That sounds about right. She wanted to be a dancer.
Sure.
Well, that's fun. Yeah.
And then she did the whole Shane Warne thing. Hugh Grant, she was dating Hugh Grant for a while as well.
Was she? Yeah. So this film's directed by Howard Ramis.
Yeah.
Or Egon Spengler, if you will, which is, that's exciting. I was surprised when his name came up in the credits, because if I had to pick, I guess, which ex Ghostbusters alumni wrote this film, I would have said, if you gun to my head, this has got to be a Dan Aykroyd project.
Really?
Because it was all about the devil and the occult in that way.
I know. Yeah, whereas if Dan Aykroyd was involved, it would have been 4 hours long and featured the history of how the devil became the devil.
Pretty much.
It's pretty condensed in this one. Actually, just jumping the trivia a little bit, it was only because Ghostbusters 3 fell over as a project that Harold Ramis decided he did want to direct Bedazzled after all, which pushed the production date back a year while they did their script rewrites.
Yeah.
And as a result, he had to relinquish his directing duties on Galaxy Quest. He was still a producer, but he was in line to direct Galaxy Quest.
Who did direct Galaxy Quest? I'll look that one
It was Dean Parisot, who did a lot of TV up until Galaxy Quest. He hadn't done a big film. And more recently, he did Bill and Ted 3, Face the Music, which is shit.
Yeah, it's not that great, is it?
But I think that's the writing that let it down, not the directing.
Okay. I mean, Galaxy Quest is still good. And
Galaxy Quest is fantastic.
On Stan right now.
Yeah.
And I think it's also on that Binge one. I got Binge to watch the Justice League remake sort of thing. Yeah, right. We can talk about that, actually. We should have talked about that last week, but we had binge? Like time.
Or no, the Justice League. No, thank you. God, no.
Honestly,
me alone. God, I need a buffer for that. Because I've got like three things to say about it and that's it.
Did you watch the new one?
No. Oh. The first thing I have to say is I'm not interested.
It's 4 hours long.
The second thing is I just don't find anything in this appealing whatsoever.
Yep. It was better.
And the third one is no thanks.
Yeah, that's better. I'll just say that the Zack Snyder version of Justice League is a lot better than the Joss Whedon one. I think that's pretty popular consensus. Right. No one's going to be ruffled by that one. It is 4 hours long, but it breaks into chapters, so you can watch it and just stop and then restart. I did it in one hit because I just wanted to finish it.
Sure. I know the Red Letter Media guys did a review of it.
I watched that as well,
And I haven't watched that. I'm just not... That's how much I'm not interested in. I like those guys, and I've watched a lot of their reviews of films that I have no interest in seeing. I'm just not interested.
They do a nice back and forth between the Joss Whedon one and the Zack Snyder one to see like the points of difference and stuff. It was better. It was better. I still think the director's cut of, or the extended version of Batman versus Superman is the best of like those three, like of Man of Steel, BVS, and Justice League. That extended cut of Batman v Superman is actually really good because it makes a story that didn't make sense make a lot of sense, and all the characters make perfect sense throughout it. It's what I wanted. I want my Batman to make sense, just a little bit.
I don't mean to dampen the mood, Seb, but you're having a conversation with yourself at this point.
Yeah, but Seb, so Bedazzled.
I love this movie. Have you ever seen the original?
No, I was considering maybe we should have doubled them up. But
no, the 1967 Peter Cook and Dudley Moore did a thing. If you like their comedy, it's very much their kind of style of things, but it's 50 years old at this point and storytelling has changed quite a bit. Have you ever seen the original Producers?
Yes.
The Mel Brooks movie, not the musical, the movie. That was done in the same year as the original Bedazzled, right? I quite like The Producers, but I think that's because I like Mel Brooks' humor, right? Whereas I never gelled with Peter Cook and Dudley Moore, and I've never enjoyed the original. The few times that I've tried to watch it, I've never really latched onto it. But this version, the 2000 Brendan Fraser, Liz Hurley one, is just fantastic. I love it.
Is the devil a female in the original as well?
Peter Cook plays the devil.
Peter Cook is a boy. There we go. Okay. He plays George Spigot.
Well, that's one of his names, but yes.
Is that an anagram?
No, that's the name that's on the nightclub as the proprietor, which I'm sure was some English law that you had to, for any nightclub, you had to display the name of the proprietor. So I'm sure that's an in-joke for, again, it's a, you know, social commentary of 50-year-old, a 50-year-old society. So there are just things that aren't going to translate very well unless you were alive or, you know, knew someone who was alive at the time.
Is there a version of this film that isn't a comedy? Like, is there an actual proper, like, sell your soul to the devil consequences sort of movie? There must be.
I'm sure there's, you know, it's some take of some mythical tale or some morality tale. But Bedazzled as a film, the first one was the Peter Cook Dudley Moore one.
Okay. I'm going to do my own little side project research right now, because I'm curious if there's been like a...
No, it's kind of a spin on the same, Arabian Nights, you know, be careful what you wish for.
Monkey's Paw.
Kind of thing. Yeah. Yeah.
This is 100% a movie with a Liz Hurley shaped monkey's paw.
Yeah, it's not a new story, that's for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Okay. So I was just more curious.
Done was. Very well. This one was done very well.
This one is really fun. Brendan Fraser. Hey, look at me. I can act. What?
Wait. He can. He's got range.
Yeah, and huge range in this one film. I guess when we'll go through the actual review, we'll go over, I guess, the 6 to 7 wishes that he actually does live through. Mm. I've got 5 wishes written down.
Yeah.
But it's 6 wishes. So
yeah,
we'll go through them in the thing, but we've got drug dealer, sensitive, mm-hmm. basketball player, mm-hmm. the writer.
And Lincoln.
Lincoln, that's the one I was missing. Thank, because that was so quick.
He wanted to be a president, you know, yep. give back to his country.
And then Big Mac.
Which happens before the contract is signed. Sure does. So that's a bit of the devil being the devil and retroactively signing. I'm sure that was part of the contract, that anything you've wished for is automatically tallied onto the 7 that you're getting as a result of signing this contract now.
I think it's a rewrite. Because in the trivia that I was reading anyway, there was originally a wish where he became a rock star and they cut it because it was like a lot of swearing. They filmed it even. Yeah. Drug use, I think they took like a bong hit or something in it. I think that there was originally meant to be that 6th wish, and the 7th wish ends up being what it actually is when he wishes for the Allison to have a good life, whatever it was.
Possibly.
But they cut it and fell back on the Big Mac as a joke.
Maybe, but the film was screen tested, so I presume that they had a few of those up their sleeve and they could just replace them. Like, yeah, if the Lincoln joke didn't land, they could swap one of them out, just whichever one landed the worst, and it just happened to be the rock star.
Well, no, it fucked the rating up, apparently.
I don't think the Big Mac and Coke was a side idea, because in the original, he wishes for a popsicle.
Yeah, and then that comes back on.
No, and then they make the trip, they go to the store, he orders him the popsicle, and he says, "Oh, I've only got £1 million note, do you have sixpence that you can pay the girl?" And Dudley Moore says, "Well, I could have done that. And yeah, I was expecting a miracle."
Yeah.
You know?
And they do the same thing where it counts as a wish?
Yeah.
Okay. So maybe that was the plan.
Yeah. And then immediately, to prove himself as the devil, Peter Cook sort of snaps his fingers and instantly transports him to the thing. Whereas in this version, a Lamborghini Diablo shows up and she drives Elliot to the nightclub.
Lamborghini Diablo, fun fact, 10-year-old Sebastian's favorite car. It has Lamborghini doors.
Why?
It looks like a mean car and it has the fun gullwing, slide doors, not the gullwing, with the slide open doors. What more did you want in a car?
I don't know.
It's a fun looking car.
No. I thought the Countach was ugly and I thought the Diablo was ugly. The Gallardo was the nicest Lamborghini for a long time. But the first one, the Miura, fucking beautiful car.
Jokes and all them, I would definitely have a DeLorean these days.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think it's back.
It's ugly.
Yeah, but it's now like fun retro. And once again, gullwing doors.
Maybe when it's done up to look like the Time Machine DeLorean.
Yep.
Because just the straight DeLorean is just silly looking car. It's like an 1990s, you know, fancy Nissan.
I'm looking at it to see what it looks like without nothing, the time stuff.
And there's nothing awesome about it at all.
Oh, it's kind of cute. There's one for sale in New South Wales.
Good luck keeping the stainless steel clean.
Oh, God. Why is that a thing? Why did they do that?
Because that was a part of the look. The DeLorean didn't want it painted.
So they're all the same color?
They're all brushed, polished stainless steel.
Interesting. It's listed for $88,000 in New South Wales. So it's definitely worth something to someone.
I'm sure it's a collector's piece.
Yeah. Yeah, fail a piece of history. Like that car Homer Simpson invented with the bubble on it. Which is also about 80... Wait a minute. Wait. Homer Simpson car price. Because the car that he made was $82,000. Jeez. That horrible green one with the bubble and stuff. So for the record...
The Persephone.
Was that what it was called?
I think so.
Oh no, it's called the Homer.
It's called the Homer? The what Homer. Am I thinking of? The Persephone.
I'm not sure.
Maybe I'm thinking of a different franchise.
We're talking about the Homer, like the Simpsons?
Yeah.
Not Homer in the Iliad?
No, that's not that. No, there was something else. Maybe I'm thinking of Dilbert, when they were, because constantly the One of the running jokes in Dilbert was that, you know, any project, you know, the most important part is the name, and you have to get that right. And Dilbert's point is, no, let's actually think of something to something to launch. And no, we've got to have a name. We've got to have a cool name.
The Persephone. Okay.
Although I thought that was in The Simpsons in the boardroom when they're deciding on the name.
It might be there, maybe, but they call it the Homer.
Right.
And it's terrible, and it's $82,000 American dollars. So you could argue that this car is sort of their prediction of the DeLorean's modern day price. They've done it again.
Maybe.
You could stretch it. I would. All right.
Speaking of Bedazzled, please. The film that we're reviewing.
The good film that we're reviewing, mind you. We're so sidetracked, but it's a good film this time.
It really is good. Audiences agree with a 6.0 on IMDb. Rotten Tomatoes 50% critical and 42% audience. Now, that compared to the original, surprising, the original has a higher rating. I don't know if that's just nostalgia or people sort of retroactively, you know, giving it more importance than it has. I don't think it's as funny, but then again, I don't really like Cook and Moore as a duo. I never gelled with their sort of humor. Mm. So it had a 6.9 on IMDb, 78% critical.
I will say, though, on IMDb, speaking in the original's favor, it was rated by almost 100,000 people, whereas the original has been rated by almost 8,500 people. Yeah. So it might also be a case of people that have specifically sought the old one out.
And who liked it.
Yeah.
You know, enough to remember it. Yeah, certainly. And it had a budget of $600,000, the original, compared to the $48 million budget of the 2000 version.
I have several questions.
Took $90 million at the box office. So it probably made all its money. Probably didn't lose the studio any money.
In what world, given the film that we watched with Bedazzled being longer, and so many different sets and so the action sequences, did this film cost $28 million less than Dudley Do Right?
And Dudley. That's exactly right.
How is that possible?
Again, Dudley was probably one of those projects that is, you know, a backroom deal for other projects going in, or, you know, all the shitty ideas get pummeled into one idea, or they, you know, like the Sony making a Spider-Man film every 20 years or so just to maintain the rights, just to keep it in copyright. And who cares if it loses money, if the film loses money, because we make so much more on the periphery with all the other, you know, just by owning the property rights to it, that we have to keep that going.
Okay.
So it could have been that as well, just to keep the rights to Rocky and Bullwinkle or Dudley Do-Right or something. It could have been that as well. And who cares what the movie does, because we're doing it
I wonder how much they had to pay in licensing fees for the characters, maybe.
Maybe the film was made in order to retain those licenses.
Yeah. Why?
You know, again, why? Whereas this actually competently made film, great story, great script, brilliant performances. Not a shoestring budget, but yeah, sort of, I think, $50 million for a movie in 2000, late 90s is perfectly reasonable.
This is a really fun film.
For a comedy too, and it's fun, and it looks great. Holds up really well.
Yeah, it still looks pretty good. There's a honestly, even the CGI is
looks
fine.
Great. The only CGI that's really in it is the basketball scene, and even then, a lot of the work is just done with clever camera work.
They did the whole Gandalf thing with the hobbits.
Yeah, the forced perspective. Yeah.
And it looks really works. Great. It held up fine. I think there's only in terms of CGI. Then the real things are if there's like a transformation from Liz Hurley into the devil. Into giant Liz Hurley. That looked fine. Yeah. And that was like, that had to be CGI in a sense because she was, you know, 30 stories high and he was normal Brendan Fraser. Like there was you couldn't do forced perspective with that difference. I can't imagine.
But even then it's, you know, it's a film trick. It's not necessarily CGI. It's just a film trick.
So yeah, it looks really good. Honestly, still really funny. I will say my only, it's not even a criticism. It's more of a criticism of how I felt about the character. I hated Elliot in this film
now,
in the beginning.
Funny you should say that. Because when it was screen tested, the audience found him so pathetic originally that he was seriously toned down, and a lot of that early Elliot stuff was cut out or cut down to what it is now, just because the audience found him so pathetic. And I'm with you too. I hate the early Elliot character.
Yeah,
he is such a dweeb.
And we're meant to think that his work colleagues are bullies. Honestly, He's just a really annoying guy.
He's forcefully annoying. He just tries to insert himself and be friendly and, you know, make those jokes.
Read the cues of this conversation shouldn't be happening.
Not at all. Here, yeah. Take a look at my speakers and yeah, I'm really interested.
I'm on my way to a business meeting. Oh, cool. Well, here's 30,000 photos to look at. Yeah. Like, he's so tone deaf.
Hey, you guys all told me you were busy and here you are drinking. Yeah, we understand if you don't want to join us, Elliot. No, I will. I'll join you. And I'll take over the conversation and make stupid jokes at everybody's expense. Yeah, he's such a dweeb. He's really unlikable.
It wasn't even like, obviously he's really nerdy and socially awkward, I guess. But he's also kind of annoying. It wasn't even just that he's not getting these cues. He was frustrating to watch, and not because he was sad, because he was just like the kind of guy you wouldn't want to spend time with.
Get away from me.
Like, it wasn't like he was like, oh, well, like, you don't look at him and feel bad for him. You look at him and you're like, go away.
Yeah, I'm so glad he's with those other people.
Yeah.
You know.
So that's my only criticism of that. But thankfully, he has a complete character shift the second the devil walks in.
Very quickly.
Because Elliot, the second he meets Lucifer, what's her actual name in this film? Just the devil?
Yeah, she just calls herself the devil.
Yeah.
She says, yeah, I have many names, but you can...
Yeah. The second he meets her... Completely different character. Not in a bad way. Like, the film is better for it.
I don't know if it's a different character, because the way she sells him on selling his soul is to focus on Allison.
Mm.
And he's actually quite sweet when it's concerning Allison. It's awkward, but he's sweet and genuine in that, he wants to be with her and not hurt her. He's not trying to get her for himself. He's just in love and that's what he wants.
Which is, it's sweet, I guess.
It's sweet, and that's how she gets him in on it. And then we start down the rabbit hole of all his wishes.
Okay, can we talk about the devil's plan here?
Yeah.
So obviously the devil wants him to use up all of his wishes, because then the deal is done.
Yeah.
And the soul is guaranteed.
Yep.
Is the devil fucking up his wishes on purpose to do this? Or is this literally a monkey's paw situation where his wishes aren't specific enough?
No, the devil is mischievous and, you know, she's having fun with it.
Is that how it goes in the original as well?
Yeah.
I figured it must, because there's seven wishes in the original as well.
Things go wrong because it's just fun for the devil. That's how the devil gets his kicks.
Yep. Side question. Every time he makes a wish and he is like, he's transported and becomes a drug lord or whatever, you know? Parallel universe? Because all of his colleagues come with him.
Yeah.
Is it a parallel world that's being created for him?
I always interpreted it as, you know, just the devil conjuring up a thing. Like, he never leaves the nightclub.
Yep.
That he's in. It just all happens there.
Yep.
At the devil's concoction, or, you know, it's all just a imagined thing in his mind, that none of it is actually happening for real. Because what does it matter at that point? You know, he signed the contract. His soul belongs to the devil now. All she has to do is, you know, fulfill these seven wishes. And what does it matter if it's all fictitious?
Yep.
He's not going to know the difference. And at the end of it, it's going to end. He's going to, you know, she's going to find a way for him to not like it, and he'll 666 out of there. And that's it. Seventh wish is done. Your soul is mine.
Okay.
And she keeps that first one. Right, the Big Mac and Coke, or some stupid wish just to prove I'm the devil, keeps that one in the bag so that you're doing your sixth wish, thinking that you've got one more in the bag, so you 666 out, and then she goes, well, that's your seventh one, your soul is mine, deal done, on to the next person.
Sneaky bitch.
But it doesn't happen that way.
No, it doesn't. We'll go from the beginning, I guess. Is there any more trivia that's worth noting or anything? Or
The thing about... Harold Ramis' involvement was the most interesting thing, I guess.
Mm.
The only other thing I had was that the classroom scene was a reshoot.
Yep.
And they all had to fly into London in order to do it, because Fraser had already started work on The Mummy 2. Had a small window of 2 days. It had to be in London. So Ramis flew the whole crew out there to reshoot the classroom scene.
Okay.
In London, which worked.
Elizabeth Hurley, is she British as well? I think she has an accent.
No, she's English.
Because also Austin Powers as well, I should have guessed. So she was probably already there.
Maybe.
And he was there. So really, they just need to fly in a bunch of... Well, they would have been British school kids anyway.
Yeah.
Just grab a cameraman, man.
Yeah.
Fly himself there.
Anyway. I'm sure he had a small crew. So that's it.
Oh, cool. Well, I mean, yeah. So we've kind of gone over the general plot, but effectively, Elliot's pathetic character, he's a girl that he's in love with who really, really doesn't know who he is, and the devil approaches him and says, hey, if you sell me your soul, I'll give you 7 wishes. And that's the best part about reviewing this film, Andrew, is because we can break this film into 7 scenes because there's 7 wishes.
No, there are only 5 that are exercised.
6 that are exercised.
And Big Mac and Coke.
Big Mac and Coke to start with. So actually one of the funnier bits in the movie, like the movie's pretty funny the whole way through, but to prove the point, before the deal's even signed, the devil says, what do you want?
Make a request for something. I'll make it happen.
And this is actually really a telling scene. And I want to go over why I liked this. He says, I wish for a Big Mac and Coke.
Yep.
So a bus pulls up instantly. Yep. And your first assumption is someone's going to get off the bus and hand them a Big Mac and Coke or something.
Nope.
They get onto the bus. Yeah. They sit there. They get off. She goes up to a McDonald's and she orders him a Big Mac and Coke. And the really important part here, and this is why I think this film's really clever. The attendant says, would you like fries with that?
Nope.
No. Big Mac and Coke.
$3.47.
Yep.
Pay the girl.
He pays.
I left my wallet in the underworld.
Yep. So he's miffed because he paid for the Coke.
I could have done that.
His complaint, I didn't even get fries.
Yeah.
And honestly, that is telling you so much. You got exactly
what you wished for. That's exactly right.
You may have wanted fries,
yep,
but you said I wish for a Big Mac and Coke.
Yeah.
And she doesn't say that to him, but it's all outlined right there.
Yeah.
These are the rules. And that's why I like this
scene. Isn't that great?
Yeah. Because it's just like, yeah, I was.
And you're going to pay for it.
Hmm?
Listen, yeah. Whatever you wish for, you're going to get it, but you're going to pay for it as well.
Yep. It's so concise and it kind of gets thrown away as a sort of throwaway gag.
Yeah.
And I mean, yes.
It's layered. It's a brilliant script.
Yeah. Really well done. So he goes to the nightclub. That's his first unofficial wish. We'll come back to that towards the end of the film though.
Yeah.
But he does that. He hasn't signed any contracts yet. Devil manipulates him into making the deal because he can use these wishes to be with Allison. That's sort of his...
That's how she sells it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he's really not interested in the wishes and, yeah, I can have all this stuff, so what, I don't care. And then the little video of Allison on the beach and this long-haired Fabio coming up and kissing her turns his head and it's Elliot. Looking beautiful and just going, sign it. Sign the contract so that you can be with me.
I'll see if I can get the exact... phrasing.
Well, it's then just played over in the loop of Allison, sort of looking longingly from the TV screen, just going, sign it, Elliot, and be with me. Sign it. Sign it.
All right. So, first wish he makes. He wishes to be rich and powerful and Allison to be his wife.
Yep.
That's what he wishes for.
And to be married to Allison, yeah.
Yes.
Specifically.
So, I'll try it because I guess the importance is his phrasing.
Yep.
As he'll learn throughout the entire film, you've got to be really careful. Was it The Simpsons? I wish for a turkey sub.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Yeah, that's good. That's good. Oh, turkey's a little dry.
Yeah. And I don't want to be turned into a turkey myself.
Yep. I don't want the turkey sub to eat me. I just want a regular turkey sub. Whatever it is. So, he wakes up in bed with Allison. He's got long hair, a mustache. It's really fun. The big joke.
It's a palace.
Yeah.
He's in a palace.
And he, through the course of the scene, will discover that he's rich and powerful as a Colombian drug lord.
It's a really nicely done thing. Like you've got the whole setup. He's got the palace. He's got his guys. He discovers he's speaking Spanish. And he can speak Spanish. That's fine. Okay.
Very funny, actually.
That's just what I do. Yes, when he realizes.
Yeah, because he's in Spanish. He's like,
yeah.
Butler.
Oh, no, sorry. I don't speak Spanish.
In Spanish, yeah.
And then his posse want to meet him at his stables. And oh, my God, my stables. Of course, my stables. I'm so rich. I've got stables. And they reveal to him that there's something funky going on with Allison and her English teacher, Raul.
Raul, yep.
And he tests her and she's not that good at English after 6 months. And yep. Okay, that's all right. That's a little bit
They're
suspicious.
Holding hands.
But yeah.
Yep.
She squeezes his butt and okay. Yep. That's what's funny. He rips off a little bit of his mustache.
It's
just great. He's got a Band-Aid for the rest of the scene. Yep. And then they say, there's trouble at the factory. Let's go.
This is great.
And Elliot, all right, he kind of gets swept up in it and a couple of military jeeps show up and a black SUV and okay, I guess I just go along with these guys and off he goes. They get to the factory and they've caught a thief.
Yep, stolen like half
and
a kilo.
And he says, we've got to deal with this thief. He stole half a kilo. And this is this is a wonderful setup. I kind of wish, and maybe in a skit it could have gone a different way. This is a brilliant setup. Elliot, this naive guy, right? He's dressed in white. He looks like Pablo Escobar. He doesn't realize it. And he's going, half a kilo? That's it? That's what we came all the way out into the jungle for? To, you know, for a guy who stole half a kilo of, what is this, sugar, flour, and... Oh, it's cocaine. This is cocaine. Oh, shit. I've just realized what's going on here. I'm a Colombian drug lord, which means now I have to kill the thief in a horribly murderous way. That doesn't happen, but I wish that,
yeah.
that brilliant setup for that kind of, you know, lulling the guy into the thing. But he realizes he's a Colombian drug lord. Oh my God, this is how everything's gone wrong. Raul is there to take over the operation and kill everybody.
That's all there's also some Russians there, and they're upset because the last shipment they got was bad quality. And he's like, oh, of course I speak Russian too. Like, he's so serious. So Raul has a little insurrection on him and a little coup, if you will. And he has to evacuate the wish because he's now falling from a helicopter into his death.
Raul's trying to kill him. Yeah. Yep. So he's got this little pager that the devil gave him. And if for any reason your wish goes wrong, just press 666 and it'll end. And that's like, it.
Why would my wish go wrong? Oh, it's just in case.
Just in case.
I do wonder if he were to have died in the wish, would that have nulled the contract?
Ah, interesting.
Because he never filled the ending. But yeah, the contract was so dense. Maybe it had a clause. Too bad.
But then the devil wouldn't get her kicks, you know?
Yeah.
The whole point is to torture him before she gets the soul.
Yeah, I'm just big contract though.
Because what better way to torture somebody than to take away from them something that they thought they were going to get?
Yeah.
Rather than just flat out torturing them.
So that's the drug dealer wish.
Yeah, and then he zaps out. She's a parking inspector then, which is also a scene in the original, and she's walking around, you know, flipping everything to expired.
Yeah.
And he says to her, "Hey, what the hell is going on? You made me a drug lord." And she says, "Hey, I fulfilled the wish. You were rich, you were powerful, and you were married to Allison."
But she didn't
love
me.
You said nothing about that.
Yep. Big Mac and Coke.
Yeah. Maybe have a think about what she would want.
And he wishes to be sensitive, right?
I think they go to her place.
Yeah.
Kind of in this ghostly form, so they can't interact with her. And she and the devil peeks a look at her diary. And the diary says in there, well, we don't know what the diary says because it's just the devil reading out aloud. Elliot never confirms it for himself. It says in there, oh, I wish, you know, I really like sensitive guys and I wish, you know, the guys I met were more sensitive.
And then Elliot, once again, without thinking
brilliant through, light bulb moment.
Wishes to be the most sensitive man in the world.
Then he corrects himself, emotionally sensitive. And Devil goes, oh, I could have fun with that.
Damn it.
Fine, we'll have it your way.
So he becomes this pasty little ginger boy who cries at the sunset. And this is...
it's so beautiful.
This is a funny scene, but it's about 5 minutes total. It's quick.
He does wish for Allison to love him.
Yes.
To be in love with him. And that's fine. I'll have you as the most emotionally sensitive man in the world and Allison will love you. Perfect.
Yep. So she loves him. They're together. They've been dating 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
He's like madly in love with her. The relationship's weirdly in advance.
He draws portraits of her in seconds.
Yep.
And she loves it.
But he's an absolute pussy.
Yep. And she's not interested in that whatsoever. A bunch of junk show up, kick sand in his face, and Allison's into that.
And she literally just leaves with him.
Yep. That's what I want. I love you. I love you, Elliot. You're great. What I want is somebody who's going to forget my name and just wants to fuck me.
Yep. So 666 out of there. It's out of all the skits, probably one of the most forgettable ones for me.
Yeah.
Memorable. So memorable
it's
is
part of a series and it's Elliot learning about himself as well.
Well, they kind of take things. None of them are as big as the drug lord sequence. That one was probably the longest.
Because it sets up the whole thing.
Yeah. Which is probably the most fun for me. Not that they're worse in comparison, but they're all shorter.
I really like the writer, actually.
The writer one's really interesting. Yeah. But well, I guess we'll get there. Yeah. So he gets out and he starts to work out. Maybe women don't know what they want. Because I asked myself to be exactly like she wanted in her diary and it was wrong.
Yeah.
But, you know, reality has now shown that Allison wants a different kind of guy. And what was the phrasing?
So Elliot says, yes, I realize that she wants, you know, a tough guy. So that's what I'm going to be. I want to be a big guy. I want to be athletic. I want to be rich. I want to be
a professional basketball player.
I want to be popular for something that I'm good at.
Yeah.
Not just popular and famous, because he already learned his lesson from the first one of being powerful. Now he wants to be powerful for something that he actually enjoys doing. Fine. Yep. Okay. And he wishes to be a professional basketball player.
For the Diablos, which is in the original scene, like the first scene before he even meets the devil in his office, he has a Diablos banner at his desk. Yeah. So it's not just the devil didn't just make up a devil team. That was one there for him.
Do you know what the opposing team are?
No, I didn't see.
Their team name is the Shirts.
The Shirts.
The Shirts. That's wonderful.
All right. So he is a 7 foot something basketball player.
He's great. He beats Wilt Chamberlain's record for points scored in any single game.
Yep.
He's wonderful. He's single-handedly. I mean, he's a team player as well. The team likes
him. He's a nice guy.
Yeah, he's not hated. He's not like, you know, completely, what's the word?
Self-centered or...
Yeah, and he's not just leading this team. You know, it's just four other guys on the court and him is the star. No, the whole team is good and he does that. But he's lost his articulation.
Well, he's very dumb now.
Yeah.
Very dumb.
Yeah, we played very well and we did very well. There's no I in team.
Got to give 110%.
Got to give 110%.
And he's sweating. Oh, so
I love that. Just every time it cuts back, that whole scene. I love the whole setup. And it's a gag that you either get or you don't straight away.
Yep.
You've got the reporter there who's... I don't want to say it because I'll screw up the joke, but it's just he's very articulate. He's using very verbose, you know, vocabulary, very articulate, and then cuts straight to Ellie just going, "Oh yeah, we play pretty good." And
there's always that pause as well. You can see like the cogs ticking in his brain. Like,
I have no idea what you said, but it's a team effort, and we did pretty good.
This is one of my funniest, like, the devil screwing him over moments, though. So Allison's a
reporter. That's not the end of the joke. That's right. Yeah.
Allison is a reporter in this world, and she's in the locker room, wants to get an interview with him, and she is hitting on him very hard.
Okay, she's not hiding it at all.
No, she's pretty much just like, "I like to fuck you, professional basketball player." That was me being subtle. So,
and I'm sure there's a big reason why you'd like to have this one-on-one with me.
Your ego must be huge after a game like that. Yeah.
You must be positively bulging with excitement.
Because you're 7 foot tall, I imagine you have a gigantic penis. So once he finally understands what she's saying, he drops his towel, and we don't see it because this is a movie, but he's got a micro dick from what we can tell. Yeah. And she is like, "I'm done. I'm
180, out. Not interested.
Yeah.
Not interested."
And
at
he
all.
Looks down and the scream he gives when he sees his dick is so fucking funny.
Damn, the devil to hell. Yep.
And then of course he goes to 666 out. He's so stupid. He's trying every possible three number combination apart from 666. He's got written all over his locker 666 and he picks up the post-it note, turns it upside down and tries 999. And that was the thing. Everything else was perfect. He didn't mind being dumb, but he wanted to have just at least a regular sized dick.
I can't remember how the devil justifies that. Like he says to her, you gave me a tiny little thing. I can't remember how she gets out of that, how she justifies out of that. I have to watch it again. But in any case, she kind of, I think she just gets him back onto the point that he wasn't as clever as he would like to be, and he wasn't that. So gets him onto the next wish straight away.
See, if I was him and he really liked that world, I would have just repeated the same wish with the proviso.
Now, that's an interesting lesson that he never picks up of just, okay, let's have the same wish, but with this refinement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, because everything else he was happy with.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't have gone back to the drug lord one, because even if Allison loved him in that reality, it's a dangerous life.
Sure.
And you can be rich in other ways that don't revolve you having to have an armed militia, you know? The sensitive one, scrap that. But the basketball one was the first one that was like 99% what he wanted. It was just that 1%.
Could have been, but then if you play that out and you only make the one refinement, okay, make my dick a lot bigger, then Allison's only there as the reporter to get the story and have the one-night stand, and that's it. Then she's out of there because she's not interested in being with this dumb guy.
I don't know, but then I guess he's still the famous celebrity. Like, he'd probably have a fun life anyway.
Well, and so he makes his next wish and he says, okay, I liked everything that happened in that one except for the dick. Make me articulate.
Yep.
Because that's what I want to be. Make me well-known and well-liked, intelligent. And yeah, make me, you know, not comically large, but yeah, give me a pretty
big one. It's like, I want a big dick. Not... the way he phrases it is like, not the size of a planet.
Yeah.
You know, like just like, you know... Respectable.
Not a practical joke size, yeah. I think he says. Yeah.
Which is like, once again, he's learning, exactly. Like, can't say I want a big one because it'll be like the size of like a human leg and I won't be able to move or something.
And she goes, done. That's fine. I can work within those terms. And an elevator opens. He's looking good in a suit.
This is the most Brendan Fraser looking person in the movie, though. This is what looks like actual Hollywood Brendan Fraser.
Yep.
And yeah.
And he's a writer writing about the postmodern collapse of, you know, French and German society after the First World War. And, oh, God, who reads this stuff? I can't imagine who does. But award-winning and he's already won his Pulitzer and hasn't even been published. All the signed characters, Orlando Jones.
Great.
I can't think of the other guy's name, but I know he played Nitro in Down Periscope. Also very funny guy. Does a excellent Frank Sinatra impersonation.
We've got Paul Adelstein and Toby Huss. It's
got to be one of those two. I can't think of which one's which. But he is just fantastic. And Orlando Jones, fantastic. Who I only really know from Evolution.
Evolution. He's really good at that.
And Mad TV. I really liked him in Mad TV. But he's articulate. Everybody loves him. He's wealthy. He knows all this stuff. Allison is there, very interested in him as an author. And she just says, look, she's talking to the hostess. Just, I want to approach him, but I'm so intimidated. And she says, no, God, just let him do all the talking. He's happy with that. And he does, and he talks a lot of crap.
A Pulitzer Prize in the 350 will get you a cup of coffee.
A cafe latte.
Which is actually
very witty. He's very witty. And Allison loves him, and he likes her. They have a great time. He invites her back to his place. And they're again talking about, decoration's really nice. You know, the decor is all beautiful. And says, there's some joke, something Allison mentioned about screaming. And Elliot says, most of the screaming happens in the bedroom. So let's go there. Where we're greeted with Elliot's boyfriend. You've been out all night again.
He's so angry with him.
And who is this? Who is this hussy you brought back?
I did like the I'm not gay. It's like, yeah, really? Name the cast of some obscure musical that I've never heard of.
The Pajama Game revival. Oh my God, I am gay. Kisses Allison.
Has to prove that he's not gay.
Feels absolutely nothing. Confirms for himself. Thank you very much for stopping by. Shakes her hand and off she goes.
Oh, God, the
brilliant. It's so funny. It's really funny.
He can't win. I guess it's the end game here. Like, even when he gets exactly what he wants, you can't factor in every possible variable.
So, next wish. Again, he's confronted the devil about, you're just trying to find ways to screw this up, aren't you? And she says, no, look, give and take a little bit. I'm trying to get it right too. You know, I'm learning. I don't know much about you. That's why you have seven. You've got to, got to experiment and refine it down.
We're a team.
And he says, okay, I'm done with Allison now. You know, it's clear that she doesn't want me and I'm so put off being with her that that's it. I'm scrapping the whole Allison thing. I'm going to, sacrifice myself and I'm going to do something. I'm going to fulfill a duty. I'm going to fulfill a public service. I wish to be the president of the United States.
Can I say, this is funnily enough, one of the funniest jokes in the film. But every time I forget about it, I forget this exists. Because it's like a 1.5 to 2 minute scene.
It's not one of the longer ones, that's right.
But it's genuinely very funny. I wish to be the president of the United States.
Done. What a service. What a brave and proud moment this is. Elliot, your wish is my command. And he takes a look in the mirror and he's a beard and stovepipe hat. And
he's Abraham Lincoln and he's going to a play.
He's at the theater. Desperately looking for his pager and looks like a cell phone. Everybody's looking around. Pager? Cell phone? What the hell are you talking about? It's 1865.
This is great. I mean, to be fair, even if he was Abraham Lincoln at the start of his life,
he knows what's coming. He knows he knows he's going to get assassinated. The John Wilkes Booth comes in, says "Sic Semper Tyrannis," and Elliot stops him. Goes, wait, presses 666, and all right, shoot me now.
Oh, poor Elliot. So Elliot has, at this point, he believes two wishes left.
Yes.
And the devil's like, oh, you got one.
Big Mac and Coke. That's exactly right.
And he argues, that's not fair. And she's like, I'm the devil.
Yeah. So you've got one wish and make it, because I've got a lot of shit to do. We've got to exercise this contract, so get snapping.
And this, you mean the fine print? You've got a certain time frame. Apparently the contract now needs to be met within.
And he says, no, I'm not going to do it. I'm just going to ride out the clock on this one. I'm not giving up my soul. Your wishes are crap anyway. I'm just not going
to
do it.
Yep. So he goes to a priest to be like, hey, I need to speak to God because I'm being jibbed on this contract. He gets taken away by police.
Yeah, he says, well, I really, you know, the priest is a, not Peter Boyle, Brian Doyle Murray.
Yep.
Kind of says, yeah, you know, I deal with a lot of weird stuff. Why don't you try me? Why don't you tell me what's going on? And he says, well, I sold my soul to the devil, and you know, I've got a number of wishes that I've exercised, and I've got one more to exercise that I really don't want because she just screws them up, and I really don't want to lose my soul. And for some reason, he has the police come and arrest him. I guess under a drunken disorderly.
This is going to sound stupid.
Yeah.
Is that Bill Murray's brother?
Yeah.
Because they look really similar. No, age difference, though.
Yeah, he's in everything. He plays the mayor in Groundhog Day.
That is him.
Yeah.
But he's actually his brother?
Yeah.
Because they got the obviously
half-brother or something. I'm sure there's some. But there's a
brother of Joel, Bill, and John Murray.
There you go.
I thought he looked really familiar, and then you said Murray, and I was like,
yeah.
Oh, and there's a connection, obviously, with Harold Ramis there.
He's in a lot of Bill Murray films, too.
He's still alive.
He shows up. Yeah, good.
Anyway, so he's taken away. Interesting scene, because apparently there's some debate over the character we meet in this scene. And I'll explain what we see, and then we'll go into what you saw and what I saw.
Sure.
So he's in a cell because he's, you know, quote, drunk. And there is an African-American gentleman in there who effectively gives him a bit of spiritual guidance. And the implication is that this man is a little bit more than what he seems. And the debate is whether or not this man is, in fact, God or an angel.
Okay, yes.
My interpretation was God, but I could also see angel. I wouldn't fight anyone on that one. But he's at least sent there. And he's on the side of he's on the good side, and that kind of gets confirmed later on at the very end of the film. We see this character again.
Well, the whole way through the film, like there's one point that Elliot kind of discusses it, brings up God, and angels aren't brought up. In the original Bedazzled, it is kind of mentioned why the devil is the devil, and Peter Cook gets up on a letterbox and just says, okay, let's say I'm God, you Dudley, you play me. And he says, how do I do that? And just go, oh, well, you know, just lavish affection upon me and dance around for my pleasure and just keep telling me you love me. Right. And after about a minute or so of this, Dudley goes, oh, God, I wish I was up on the box and getting some of this love. And Peter Cook goes, yes, that's exactly how I felt. That's exactly why I was cast out. There's none of that in this one, but it is God and the devil mentioned. No other angels.
Mm. And it's just
him and me, and that's the only reference we get to any sort of afterlife.
And this film,
supernatural stuff, yeah.
Does confirm God's a male in this lore.
Sure.
Because she says, yes, it is a he.
Him and me,
Every man thinks he is God. This one just happens to be right. But yeah, we see at the very end of the film, this gentleman and the devil are playing chess.
Yeah.
So he's not just some random prisoner.
Yeah.
He is, in fact, someone of note, whether it be God or an angel.
This isn't a biblical interpretation of the God and the devil. It's more of that, you know, good and evil.
Yeah.
That they're representatives of two sides. Or mischief and morality.
Yep. But anyway, his message is, devil can't take what you can't sell to the devil what you don't own.
Yeah.
Which does raise a couple of questions if that is God saying, well, your contract's void anyway.
So what the hell is the devil, you know, counting on?
Yep.
Is it just counting on Elliot not making a fuss once the seventh wish is done just to say, your soul is mine? So voluntarily, you know, come down to this cage and that's how she gets them?
Yep. Yeah.
Who knows?
So he makes his final wish,
which is completely self-sacrificing. It has nothing to do with him at all. He just says, look, I love Allison, so I just wish for her to have a good life. And this pisses the devil off.
Yep. But
because the contract's void.
This is the Little Nicky ending, where Little Nicky dies doing something good, so he goes to heaven rather than hell, and he gets angel powers, except, I mean, it's obviously different, but it's the concept of self-sacrifice negates some sort of Faustian pact or something. Yeah. Anyway, cool. Yep, undoes the contract. Devil's not even that bitter about it. She's like, this is the first time this has ever happened to me.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Kind of amazing. In 6,000 years, kind of amazing.
Yep. And just saying, like, yeah, no one ever reads a contract. But to be fair, if you did read the contract and did it, I don't think it would count because you did it knowing that
the
it would save you.
Devil would find a way around that. That's exactly right.
Ignorance is probably what saved him in this case. But that's the same reason you couldn't repeat it. Like if she said, do you want to do another seven wishes? He could never get out of it again because he'd be knowingly cheating a system.
That's right.
And it would be obvious. Anyway.
So Elliot has changed as a character. He, you know, becomes himself again. He's free and clear of the soul obligation that he had to the devil, but he's got a lot more confidence in himself, a lot more self-esteem. His workmates, when he shows up for work the next day, he shows up late, and he gets chastised by the boss, and he just kind of stands up to the boss and just says, "Fine, okay, if you're going to do something about it, then do something about it. Otherwise, leave me alone and let me do my job." So pendulum swinging right the way on the other side. One of his workmates that was justifiably annoyed by his behavior in the past comes up to him and just tries to make fun of him, and he just grabs him by the things. Doesn't say anything, just grabs him by the collar just to show him, it's not gonna work today. This isn't me anymore.
And I will say, and I thought it was really funny, the actress, like that was like the female coworker. Looks a little bit flustered.
Yeah.
When she's saying up.
Oh, it's great when they're all coming down, coming back down into the cubicle from the glass. Yeah. And you've got the guy who played his boyfriend in one of the scenes. He's in the walkway, but he just does this funny, oh yeah, I better go down too.
Yep. And then, yeah, Elliot goes back to his apartment and there's a quirky lady moving in above him and below him. He helps her out and they start dating.
Looks exactly like Allison, but is nerdy, is into the same speakers as he is because they're the best.
Was it the same actress?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was Frances O'Connor. She was Australian. Or she is Australian. She's an
expat. We got rid of her.
Listening to her in interviews with that very obvious Australian accent, it sounds so bizarre. I've never heard her speak in her normal voice before, in her normal accent.
Hmm.
Only ever heard her with an American accent.
Oh, she's from AI. The Steven Spielberg
movie. Was she the mother in that?
I don't even know. I have to just go and
but
see.
But she's certainly done a lot of work, yeah. She's not a nobody. And she's good. She's good as Allison because she plays multiple versions of Allison too.
She's top billed in AI.
Just as many as Elliot plays versions of himself.
This would have been a really fun film to act on, I think.
Yeah.
Like, cool. I get to do how many characters?
I did watch a lot of the behind the scenes. I wanted to see the gag reel, but I only saw behind the scenes stuff. And a lot of the interviews were, one of the reasons for signing on to this was playing so many different characters all, you know, tied together with this one central character. Yeah, of course, I'm an actor. Of course I'm going
to
do that.
That sounds really fun. And like the range from the drug lord to the sensitive man to the writer to the basketball player, like they're all big shifts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really and Brendan Fraser himself in one of the interviews, okay, it's really easy to say when you make millions, to say, okay, if I wasn't making millions, I'd still be acting because you are making millions. Yep. But he said, if I wasn't in Hollywood doing movies and I was just in a community theater doing this stuff or you know, touring the road or doing doing puppet shows with the things, I'd still be acting because it's just something I love doing.
And you can see why with a role like this. This is fun.
And he's good in this. Mm. And Frances O'Connor is good as Allison. Terrifically acted. And Liz Hurley is the devil. It's brilliantly performed all the way through, especially the side cast. You know, everybody brings their A game. This is a fantastic film. I've given away the verdict.
Let me hit the fun music button and we'll get there.
You've heard the good, you've heard the bad. A lot of opinions, a couple facts. It's verdict time.
Yeah, obvious recommend. This is... So far, out of all the Brendan Fraser films we've done, George of the Jungle, Blast from the Past, Dudley Do-Right, and this, This, I think, is my favorite.
I would say exactly the same, yeah. Like the favorite Brendan Fraser film of all.
I'd have to go back and check a couple.
I like The Mummy. I like Blast from the Past. I really like Bedazzled.
Yeah.
I think this is my favorite Brendan Fraser film.
It's a rare 90-minute comedy that didn't feel too quick, didn't feel too long. It felt like the absolute perfect length. It never overstayed its welcome, and it wasn't too brief. And you could say you should leave a movie wanting a bit more, but I was completely satisfied.
Yeah.
Yep.
There's no down moment in the film. You're interested all the way through, and rewatching it, there's no point where you go or skip over it. Even Elliot being the sensitive, most sensitive man in the world version of himself, that's the most boring of all of them. But even that isn't a low point in the film. It's still a part of the story and you watch it happily.
And even for a boring moment, it's what, a 2-3 minute scene? It knows not to overstay its welcome.
It's kind of funny because he keeps looking at the sun and just said already, I'm sick of crying. I've made, you know, dolphin-free tuna niçoise for us to share. And Alison's just not interested. And you see it building in her. Just, I'd love you, but this is too much. I can't take it. Just fuck me already.
Easy recommend. So I guess next week we'll kind of amend it. We're doing Airheads.
Please.
And?
I can't find it anywhere, but definitely should do it.
So we'll do Airheads and we'll do the week after that, Monkey Bone. And then if we feel so daring, maybe we'll go into the Mummy Trilogy. Maybe this is a year of Brendan Fraser. Until the rest of the cast comes back with us, it's just Andrew and Seb reviewing Brendan Fraser films.
He's a likable guy. I like him.
Yeah. And he's got a weirdly diverse range of films under him. We could go into like deep dramas if we wanted to with the guy as well. Like there's nothing keeping us to these weird 90s comedies. We can go serious as well.
I was just going to say, I don't think I've seen anything he's done for the last 15 years. He's been working the whole time.
Yeah.
They've all been smaller projects, more independent films. I haven't seen a single one of them.
He was in some Western TV show, but I can't remember what it was called. Apparently it was pretty good, but I don't know. I'm sure we'll find some stuff. But if we want to do the Mummy films and the next two, we've got 5 more to go, plus Looney Tunes back in action later this year. We can do 10 to 11 Brendan Fraser films in a year. A fifth of our yearly catalogue can be Brendan Fraser. And because we missed so many weeks because of COVID, it's going to be more than a fifth. Texas Rising. That might be the show, the miniseries that he was in where he's a cowboy. Maybe.
We'll find out. Find us on Instagram at Second Take Podcast, or if you live in the future, you can tweet us at Second Take TNC. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/Second Take Media Review Podcast.
You can tweet me at Bastion_James and Jordan at JordanMSPP. Send us an email, secondtakepodcast@gmail.com, or our website, secondtakepodcast.com. And finally, you can support the show on our Patreon, which is patreon.com/secondtake. So back next week with Airheads and the week after with Monkey Bone.
Woohoo!
So you've never seen Monkey Bone, right?
Nope.
Good.
At least I get Airheads.
You get Airheads. Maybe watch them in reverse order. Watch Monkey Bone first and then a palate cleanser of Airheads. I'll do it the other way around so I can come in bitter and cynical. It'll be great. But thank you so much. And I still haven't changed the song, so please enjoy Tarzan Boy.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.